the Initial Reaction podcast, where we make sure well in advance that our playing surface is ready for use. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers.
Now looking for employment after getting fired from my turf painting job in Canton, Ohio, I'm J.P. Kadoran with Time Warner Cable Sports Channel.
Even though Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to play in that game, he has to be on the list of suspects of people who painted that field at the Hall of Fame game that caused that game to get canceled.
Oh, that's funny. I like that.
Yeah, it'd be a bigger scandal than Deflategate. So UJP, you flew to Ohio. The big story this week, of course, is the Green Bay Packers, where Brett Favre was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It was marvelous. It was like 45 minutes or something of Brett Favre kind of meandering, and everyone loved it.
36 minutes and 14 seconds.
It is disturbing the number of people who had timed that thing, fully expecting that it would be that lengthy, but that's fine. And then the following day, the Packers were slated to face the Indianapolis Colts in the first of five meaningless football games. This one never happened. The field. Now, first of all, explain exactly. I kind of read about this. So there's paint at the middle of the field that I get was the wrong kind of paint, and it sort of congealed and it got very hardened. I don't understand what the rubber pellets, what they had to do with it. Explain what happened. You were there. You were standing on it.
I was there. I was standing on it. Not while they were trying to inspect it. I was not standing in their way. I want to get that out in the open right now that I was not ruining everything. Just
you were not
record.
Taking selfies with the inspection crew or the paint crew for that matter.
No, thought about it, but then didn't think about it. Anyway, what happened was, so like Thursday when we got into town, there's like a plastic barrier over the field. So, you know, it was not a field, it was plastic. It was a floor. Friday night, they had the Tim McGraw concert. Saturday, they had the enshrinement ceremony all on that field. And then they started taking the plastic covering off late Saturday night into early Sunday.
Tim McGraw a good show?
I do not know. I was working.
Okay.
Yes. They took it off Saturday night into Sunday morning, and then they painted the midfield logo and the end zone logos on basically Sunday afternoon around 2 o'clock is the time that I keep hearing. When they did that, they were worried it wouldn't dry, so the rumor is, and whether or not this is true doesn't really matter, the rumor is they even used heaters on it or dryers, you know, to try and get it to dry faster. Whether or not that's true, it was still 85 and sunny down there, so basically the paint melted, and it became this sticky, tarry, hard, like a hard, sticky substance, which makes complete sense, of course. And it just, I mean, you couldn't, it was like walking on a different surface. You would be walking on grass and then you'd be walking on goo. And that's not good to play football on.
That does sound sort of entertaining, kind of like playing, I don't know, playing in the backyard where there's all sorts of different surfaces. I really don't see the problem here.
Yeah, only it's not entertaining. So it was not good.
Strange, though, that they would be painting the field so close to the game that they felt they had to expedite the drying process, although I guess the Tim McGraw concert and the various other festivities play into that. A lot has been made about how the turf was brought in from New Orleans, I believe, how they've played on it many times, and to sort of ironically fix the problem last year where the turf conditions were frowned upon, and actually kicker Sean Swisham tore, I believe, his ACL and was out for the year as a result, or maybe not as a result, but definitely on this playing surface. And then this happens. It was sort of a very bizarre soap opera as it's unfolding where people weren't really, they weren't sure it was canceled. Players were hearing it was canceled. There was no official word. The big story that fans were still being allowed into the stadium and there was a countdown that indicated the game was still going on long after that decision had been made. Yeah. What was your perspective on sort of the timeline there?
That part sucked. You understand everything, all the calls that were made and everything that happened, but for them to keep allowing fans to come in knowing full well that this was not going to happen, or at the very least it was going to be delayed. Not only did they let them keep coming in, but they sat down in their seats and there was absolutely no mention of it on the PA system at all. So clearly, you know, a lot of people have their phones and they're checking their Twitter accounts or news or whatever to see what all of us are saying, which, by the way, we didn't have any info either. Just to let them come in and sit down and just keep going about their business just felt wrong. I just felt bad for the fans, even though, you know, they made the right call. I mean, if they were to play on this, there is absolutely no guarantee that there couldn't have been a lot of injuries. I mean, it was absolutely the right call. I just think they didn't go about it in the best way.
I was trying to think maybe behind the scenes. I'm sure they're not going...
chaos.
It had to be. And obviously the fans, unfortunately, are going to be the last to know, because if, let's say, at the last second you decide, no, we're going to play the game,
yeah.
You don't want to have told fans, no, we're not playing the game, have them leave the stadium, where you're, of course, famously not allowed back in. I'm sure they would have made exceptions, but that can be very chaotic as well. Like, they don't – I know this is being framed as, well, they wanted the fans to come in and still buy all the merchandise and the food and stuff before letting them know, oh, hey, bad news, now that you bought all that stuff, we're not actually – having a football game. I just imagine that it was so crazy that they didn't want to alert anybody until they knew for sure. On the other hand, an organization like the NFL, I don't want to pretend this is a crisis by any means, but you know they have a crisis communication plan, and that this is the type of thing that an organization of that size should be equipped to deal with. It seems weird that even as of 20 minutes before kickoff, there was still a countdown on the scoreboard saying, yay, the game's coming soon, when obviously it wasn't coming soon.
Absolutely. So that, I mean, it just kind of rubbed you the wrong way, but they made the right call. I mean, that's what they absolutely had to do. So, I don't mind it. And, you know, that's the other thing. Like, how much does this actually matter? I think the veterans obviously did not want to play. The rookies absolutely wanted to play. The coaches wanted the rookies to play, but the coaches also wanted to get out healthy first and foremost. So I think the Packers would be kind of split on it. ESPN cared because they had 4 hours of programming to fill.
Yes.
But everybody,
the newspaper industry would care because they have a lot of column inches to be dedicated to this game.
Which they ended up getting all that and more, maybe, because of all the things surrounding it. But people at home, I mean, how much did people at home care? How much was an average Packers fan going to watch that game? The first series, the first quarter?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think people are more, there are way more people who are like, woof, one less preseason game than people disappointed about watching it. And everyone's talking about the rookie quarterback that would have got a shot for Green Bay. And I mean, it's fair. He would have had more playing time had there been a fifth game. But honestly, like, nobody who's is a Green Bay Packer fan is worried about whether the third string quarterback gets a chance to showcase himself. And as far as this being a league embarrassment, I think it comes down to one or two people screwed this up. They didn't get the correct paint or they didn't follow the correct procedure. And this is not an NFL stadium, so you're dealing with people who are not normally associated with NFL franchises, most likely. I don't know all the ins and outs, but this is a makeshift situation where things like this could happen with just even the tiniest miss of oversight. So I just think somebody dropped the ball. They'll probably get fired for it, but I don't think it's a big deal to the wider fan base. I just feel for those fans that, and I don't even know, maybe you can speak to this too. Is there something they could have done differently for the fallout? Like, have fans interact more with the players or do something? I don't know if that type of thing can be arranged on short notice, but it seemed like everybody sort of huddled into the center of the field and the fans were sort of like left out of the cold, like, we're just going to be over here, guys.
Yep. And so they brought the players out. They still got their Lee Greenwood concert. So, I mean, how much are they really complaining here?
You mean he has more than one song?
He sang Where the Stars and Stripes, Where the Eagles Fly, like that one country song that I...
Toby Keith, yeah.
Yeah, is that it?
I feel like he can only sing songs about patriotism. That's an awful, awful pigeonhole to be in.
Yeah, and then there's one other song that it was either a cover or I didn't know it. I can't remember because I just tuned out. And then he sang God Bless the USA. Anyway, yeah, the players came out and they did interviews on the big screen with the Hall of Famers and the current Packers players and the current coaches and everything. So they tried to entertain them. You know, some people had brought up like an autograph line. And the problem with that is that there's 22,000 fans there. And if everybody's,
you can't do it.
I mean, that's a crush waiting to happen. If you're having people try and stream down, towards the bottom row to try and get an autograph. So I don't think that could have happened. I don't know. I think they tried to, I mean, they provided an hour worth of entertainment, of interviews and crap like that. So I think they did a good enough job. Fans are getting their money back anyway. If you bought it through the NFL, if you bought it through StubHub or a ticket broker, you're probably out of luck, which I also thought about this, those ticket brokers then get paid twice because they get paid by the NFL if they choose to redeem it. I guess maybe there's probably something in place. You have to have the actual ticket in hand. But then they got paid from whoever bought it from them. So good for them if that works. Anyway, so I think, listen, they got a free night of entertainment. And really, the whole weekend to me wasn't about that game. There might have been some people who came in just on Sunday just for the game. But almost everybody was there for Saturday night. You know, Sunday was like a, oh yeah, it's not the, it's the Hall of Fame weekend. It's not the first preseason game weekend. You know, it's there because of what happened Saturday night. Sunday was just kind of a way to kick off the season.
I agree with that. If there's any situation where fans kind of get jobbed out of being at a game, this is the best case scenario. And like you said, most people didn't come to Canton, Ohio for a Sunday game and skip the Saturday Hall of Fame festivities. Yeah. I'm sure there were some, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who lost a lot of money somewhere along the way by staying an extra day or whatever.
Yeah.
But they got a lot of Brett Favre out of it, which is what I'm sure a lot of Packers fans wanted to see. I was transfixed by Brett Favre's 36-minute speech, mainly because I am a Packers fan and enjoy the career of Brett Favre. I thought it got a lot of, like, really positive reviews from all the national writers and stuff. I thought it was kind of – I didn't think if I was not a Packer fan, I would have enjoyed it. It was just kind of roaming and meandering, and it touched on fatherhood and a few things which I think are universal. But honestly, I guess I don't know. I thought it might be a little overrated in the short term. Maybe not.
It could have been, and I heard some people even locally say that Kevin Green probably had the better speech. I thought it was good, though. I think Favre has a way of – he just has an everyman feel about him, even though he's made, you know, $200 million. He just has a way of talking and of storytelling that makes you think that, like, he's your neighbor or he's your uncle or he's your friend, where he says something and you just kind of – you take him at his word and you're just kind of like, oh, yeah, I get it. You know, I think he has a brilliant way of doing that. And so for that reason, 36 minutes didn't feel all that long to me. I'm not a tremendous Packers fan. I didn't grow up idolizing Brett Favre. I certainly enjoyed watching him, but it was interesting. It was interesting to watch him do that, and to watch the crowd might have been even the craziest part of all of it, because that crowd was legitimately 90% Packers fans. It was like they were holding it at Lambeau, and they were baited on every single word that he said. One of my favorite moments was when he talked about the fans and he thanked Green Bay's fans, saying that they're special and basically pandering, even though most of what he said was true. Just to watch the way that the fans reacted to it, it was like it vindicated it for them. They were like, oh, yes, somebody finally, like, thanked us. He finally understood what we've been cheering for him for. It was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I heard in a good way. I heard the Packer fans had several hours to celebrate prior to the actual ceremony itself.
Well, it was all day long, and but there was a lot of them. It was, I think they reveled in that fact that it was basically an away game. It was an away thing for them, and they made it feel like Lambeau. So they were feeling good regardless of how many spirits they had taken in.
You talked to a lot of people during the week. Was there one moment or one person that you thought that was your favorite, one highlight?
Not necessarily. I think everybody was pretty good. So it was on our roundtable that we did, well, Friday and Monday. I don't know. I mean, Steve Mariucci, KGB, Bajia Biamila, we got him. We got John Gruden, Mike Holmgren, Matt Hasselbeck, Marco Rivera. I mean, there are just a lot of guys, and they all talk about their interaction with Brett, and obviously it's all positive because you would never say anything negative in situations like this, but it was fun to hear them talk about him, just the way that he led them and the way that he was a part of, I don't know, just kind of, they said how down to earth he was, and that kind of illustrates what I had said before, how he was just one of the guys, despite him never actually being one of the guys.
Let's give a listen to some of the audio that you captured in Canton.
Yeah, we're gonna start with, and there's absolutely no doubting who this would be, but we'll start with John Gruden, then we'll get to Steve Mariucci, and then I think Hasselbeck after this is what we have. So there you go.
With John Gruden, who actually picked Brett Favre up at the airport right after the trade?
That's right. Seems like yesterday, but at least I did one thing right in my career.
What do you remember most about him on the field?
He's just a game changer. He was a game changer, not only as a talent, but just as a person. He brought enthusiasm, effort, toughness, and he brought it every day. And when we needed a play in those early years, he made it.
You study football and football history as much as anybody. Where does he fit in?
I don't care. I mean, in my book, he's at the very top. If it wasn't for Brett Favre, I know this, Andy Reid, Mariucci, myself, a lot of us would have never had the careers we've had. He made a lot of memories very special. Well, I just can't wait to see him put on a gold jacket, honestly. It's something that's well-deserved. It's going to be emotional for me because I saw him at the very beginning, and now I get a chance to see him put an exclamation point on a great career. But he turned his program around. Mike Holmgren needs to be brought up in this Hall of Fame conversation because he trained him. He trained us, and we trained Brett together, and all I can say is this is a great weekend. A lot of great inductees.
When Brett started, Sterling was there. He played with some really good receivers. None of them are in the Hall of Fame, and I don't know if they're going to get in. Do you think, because he was so good, receivers kind of were...
He played with everybody. He played 100 years, didn't he? Yeah. I mean, he played with Randy Moss. He threw number 500 to Andre to Randy Moss. He threw a touchdown in a Super Bowl to Andre Rison. Antonio Freeman, Robert Brooks, Sterling Sharp, Donald Driver. The list goes on and on. I mean, if he'd have played with Greg Jennings another 10 years, Jennings would be in the Hall of Fame. But didn't really have a consistent battery for a long period of time. But everybody deserves credit when Favre puts a jacket on. I think the Packer Nation will unite, and even the fans enjoy credit for this.
With Steve Mariucci, who worked so closely with Brett Favre when he first came to Green Bay, what do you think of when you see him going into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think after we watched him play, and I can speak for all Packer fans, right? After we watched him play for a few years, we thought this day might come. But who would have thought he would play 20 years in the National Football League? And here it is. Here's the day. And he was very well received, obviously. Brings back a lot of great memories. Being, you know, we were both kind of babies and rookies together in Green Bay, and kind of grew up together.
There was some turbulence early on. When did you know he was going to be great?
You know, you never really know for sure until he starts doing it year after year after year. But I think if we go back to the first game that he played a considerable amount of time when Don Majkowski got hurt against the Bengals at home in Lambeau, and Brett came back and played well enough to win that game, but he did a lot of crazy things in that game. Even forgot to go out to hold for the extra point at the end of the game. But that game was a microcosm of his career. You never knew what was going to happen when he went back to pass, but most of it was going to be exciting, and most of the time he was going to win, and that's exactly what he did in that game. So after that, you know, we sat down as coaches and went, you know what, maybe we've got something here. The kid's a wild stallion, and he's got a lot to learn. But boy, he's a competitor, and he's an excitable kid, tough guy. And so I think there were a lot of indicators in that very first game.
Matt, what was tonight like for you?
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, the whole weekend, really. Just you know, spending the afternoon with all my old teammates, all Brett's old teammates and coaches. It's just an honor to be here.
What was it like to be his teammate? Because you were very close to him.
You know, I've said it many times. I felt like I should have been paying them. They were paying me. I felt like it was like the Harvard Business School for a young quarterback in the NFL. I was a fourth string quarterback on the practice squad. Mike Holmgren's my head coach. Andy Reid's the quarterback's coach. Brett Favre, Doug Peterson, Rick Meyer. It really was the best way you could come in the NFL.
For someone that doesn't know Brett Favre on a personal basis like you do, how would you describe him?
He's really grown as a person. I mean, it's just, he was the wild child, absolutely. And to see him grow as a person, as a dad, as a father, as a grandfather now, it's weird to say that I'm proud of him, but it's just amazing to see because he really was a rebel.
Thanks to Dennis Krause for those interviews. So let's switch gears from the Green Bay Packers. We'll surely talk at length about them in the coming weeks, but right now there's another sporting event going on. For the first time ever in South America, in fact, it's the Olympics, of course, in Rio de Janeiro. JP Cadoran has been watching attentively to all the storylines in such sports as
everything.
Table tennis and handball.
I have made it my mission to watch every single event from start to finish. Ask me anything.
Did you?
I have not been. I was like, well, I was in Canton over the weekend. Like, basically, had no idea the Olympics were starting. Had no
they
idea
weren't.
That soccer started like 3 days before the Olympics. Yeah, it was just I've been so out of it. So then we landed on Monday. Then I went straight to Miller Park to interview Orlando Arcia. And then so like Tuesday was my first day of like actually being a human and like realizing, okay, what's going on? When is it going on? What channels are these on? You know, like how am I watching these Olympics? And luckily that coincided nicely with swimming being awesome.
Yes, Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky, of course, have taken center stage for the U.S. team. Lily King, known now for her displeasure with the Russian swimmer who was allowed to compete but did, in fact, defeat said swimmer for a gold medal. That's become quite the storyline. The gymnastics is a thing with the women's team winning and then Gabby Douglas not making it to the all-around because she took third overall behind her two teammates and only top two from each team get to go through. Those are the high points, I would say. Here is what I have... What really has dawned on me this Olympics, there are so many sports, JP, that you can win a gold medal in while wearing khaki pants.
So you're in, is what you're saying.
No, well, I certainly love me some khaki pants, but I'm kind of surprised, and I certainly don't feel this way. Please take this as a very sort of hysterical conversation and not really how I feel, but it's surprising to me that sort of the everybody gets a trophy crowd or the devaluing of the gold medal crowd hasn't come out of the woodwork for the Olympics, because there are a ton of events, some of which just simply I refuse to believe are played in the vast majority of nations around the world, and maybe that's just my ethnocentrism being from the United States, but you think about the sport of sailing or dressage or shooting sports or table tennis or golf. I mean, these are sports, but they're definitely not sports you really feel like you're getting a workout playing. I mean, it's just kind of interesting. I don't know why this hasn't dawned on me before, probably because I'm a passive Olympics watcher and I'll watch the swimming and then the track and field. But for the most part, it's really hit me this year. The variety is pretty strange when you boil it down.
Yeah, and I haven't been exposed to that many of them, so I probably haven't had the chance for that feeling. With me, it's almost I'm starting to kind of feel bad winning all of these. Like, do you get that?
Definitely.
Like, we're leading the medal count 27-17-7 right now. U.S., right. China, South Korea. And I just imagine it's going to get even more lopsided. And it's just kind of where you almost feel bad, don't you?
Yeah, it won't be so bad because the swimming is such an American sport.
Yeah.
Relative to other nations. But you watch, for example, the Michael Phelps race where he won his 20th of 21 gold medals. You don't even need that many gold medals. So it was Van Klo, I believe is the name of the South African swimmer.
Sure.
Who was
South African punk. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So like the narrative is, you know, he's warming up and bothering Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps gives him a now famous death stare that
Fantastic.
Will be circulated as heavily as the crying Jordan face on social media. And he's sort of the villain, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it from the rest of the world's perspective. There's no way they see Van Klo as the villain. In fact, quite the opposite. I'm sure they think, oh, great, Michael Phelps is going to win another gold medal. Let me cheer for the guy who doesn't have one and who's fighting with them, you know, like all the way to the wall. Like, I'm sure the rest of the world really was pulling for Van Klo, and I just can't really blame them.
Yeah, and so I feel bad a little bit because, listen, we're winning all these medals. But, first of all, I still want to win them all. I mean, I was certainly screaming for Phelps in the pool last night, absolutely. And also, I think it's probably a little selective coverage on NBC's part, that they're going to show something that's going to get the best ratings. Well, what's going to get the best ratings? Things that, A, Americans are interested in, even if they don't win, and B, things that Americans win. So they're going to show every American gold medal, but they're not going to show something that the U.S. has no interest in. And if they do, it's going to be at 2 in the afternoon on USA Network, you know?
I totally agree with that, yeah.
So I'm just kidding. I'm not sick of them. Keep winning. I love you, America.
Yeah, I obviously pay attention when Michael Phelps is going for gold number 21. I'm watching that race, even though I kind of don't mind if he spreads the wealth a little bit. But it is pretty impressive. I mean,
no, but that would be
insane.
So terrible. Oh, I would hate that so much if he were to lose.
I think this year,
it's part of it is watching his greatness and watching just how unbelievable it is that
you know, he was depressed and thought about suicide 2 years ago. And now right. here he is doing this. I mean, it we need to watch this greatness. It's incredible to watch.
It's true. It is also, though, a case study in narrative building where, and this is not new information, we take these athletes that we literally have never heard of before they show up on our TV screens, and, yep. and they are our best friends. And if Lily King doesn't like the Russian, well, Lily King is my new favorite person in the world, and that story has a lot of layers to it. I don't mean to, like, simplify it, but I don't know. I'm feeling a little jaded. I'm feeling like it's just, oh, it's NBC not allowing you to even use the hashtag Rio 2016 if you're a national brand, or not let you show highlights on the news broadcast if you're not an NBC affiliate. And it feels like that is so counter to the spirit of these games. I don't want to get sappy or ridiculous about it, but like,
oh, you did.
I'm starting to really feel that in my old age, that this is so not what they sell the Olympics to be. This like, this great gathering every four years.
I mean, don't even, we haven't even brought up basketball yet. You kidding
me? Which is a joke. It's a joke. They should suspend that as a sport. And I mean, that's, it's not America's fault that they're just better than everybody else, but that's, it's not even worth having. It's not. It is not worth having. Because do you know any of the American basketball players? Like, if I gave you a list of NBA players, could you tell me off the top of your head if they've won gold or not? I know that would be really difficult for me because yeah. I don't remember which ones play in the Olympics because I don't care. They're going to win when they get there, right? If
yeah.
they don't, that's a story too, but I don't even know who's on that team. I think Vince Carter might have a gold. I don't know.
Yeah, so somebody along the same lines of kind of what I've been saying is like somebody who's talking about having an American Olympics of just doing it state by state and how much fun that would be. Like talking about specifically basketball, like an Illinois team against, you know, like a DC crew, which is, I guess, kind of what the basketball tournament did like a week or two ago.
Which was a lot of fun, by the way. We could revisit that someday. I really liked that idea.
Yeah. So like an American Olympics, just how fun that would be. And then like Minnesota versus Wisconsin in hockey.
Yes.
You know, like sailing for all the East Coast places. Like it could be really fun. And that's sad that that's what we have to think about because the basketball team is so good and our swimming is so good, but as I watched on TV and as they're showing right now, sand volleyball lost, so we're not awesome at everything.
Really?
Just most things, yeah.
I enjoy
volleyball. There's a chance they could still advance, don't worry. They're not totally eliminated like our Rugby Sevens team was eliminated today.
Well, the Rugby Sevens team did not expect to win or anything. They were you know,
that good,
how they did was fine. How they did was fine. I guess. I'm not an expert on rugby, but since the Olympics are on, I'm going to go ahead and pretend I'm an expert
on
rugby.
That's very Canada of you, saying it's fine.
It's fine.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I think Wisconsin would do really well in the Winter Olympic version of the United States Olympics. I think that would be great. Oh, man, I really like that idea. I want it to happen now.
But then you have to set parameters of, is it where you're born? Is it where you go to high school? Is it where you associate with, you know, because if you're like, if you're a speed skater, you move to places, you know, like you move to Wisconsin to go to high school and to train, or like some swimmers like don't even go to high school because they just train, they just do homeschool.
How great would it be if it were the state where you were born and how random that would wind up? I would, by the way, be playing for the Pennsylvania team. Which I know, right? And I've lived in Wisconsin pretty much all but 2 months of my life.
I'm Menominee Falls proud. I would be a part of our hockey team.
I think this is an idea we need to investigate. You're right. You'd have to be certified in a particular state. You don't want Team Nebraska getting a bunch of great basketball players together and upsetting the nation with their basketball team.
Oh, God. Can you imagine that? Well, and clearly we would add sports. So, like, football would clearly have to be in the American Olympics.
Not even
a
question.
And that Texas versus Ohio versus, what, Pennsylvania versus Florida Final Four?
Amazing.
Oh,
amazing. We'd have lacrosse. We'd have baseball, obviously. We'd have softball. All these things would be up for
interpretation. Who'd win the baseball American Olympics?
Probably
Florida?
One of those southern teams. Yeah, Florida.
Even like Alabama, though, right?
Yeah,
or like Louisiana?
Sometimes. Yeah, Louisiana. Texas is going to be really good at everything.
I think so.
Yeah, California.
Yeah, look out for Arizona. Arizona could be a dark horse for a lot of sports. Even hockey.
Like,
some of the best hockey players in the country are coming out of Arizona.
We should do an entire preview of the U.S. Olympics as if it were happening and, like, break down who's going to be on what team. I really think this is an idea we could have. The Wisconsin team, by the way, would not be good at baseball. Just throwing that out there.
Would not be good at baseball, but speed skating, absolutely.
Right. And in football, let's take a look at this. I mean, we've got Joe Thomas on the offensive line, J.J. Watts on the defense, Joe Schobert.
It's a pretty good team. It's not going to be even remotely close.
No, I totally agree
with you. You're going to name six people, and then you're going to be like, yeah, we're done.
Pretty good offensive line, though. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. But you don't get to claim Russell Wilson, okay? You can only claim one thing. And that 3 months that he lived in your state is it.
I don't know if there is even a single quarterback in Wisconsin. Joel Stave has got to be the quarterback for the Wisconsin.
This was before my time. Where were Brooks Bollinger and John Stocko? They weren't from Wisconsin?
No, I can't remember where John Stocko was from, but it's not Wisconsin.
What about Dustin Shearer?
I don't even know who that is.
I think he's from Illinois. He was 2008. It was between him and Alan Everidge. That was my first season.
Okay, yeah. I mean, Tyler Donovan is the last Wisconsin quarterback before Joel Stave, I believe.
This is fascinating, though. I love this. Wonderful. My brain is just racing right now, thinking of different sports and different people.
We should just make the Team Wisconsin football team. We can pull that off. God.
Oh, my goodness. Where did we go?
It's great. So, circling back to the actual Olympics.
No, not yet, because basketball, Sam Decker and Kevon Looney are headlining that team, along with...
Oh, Diamond Stone.
Does Caron Butler still have any legs left in him?
I mean, everybody little needs veteran leadership, so there's Caron Butler for you. Maybe Nick Van Exel comes out of retirement.
Oh, boy.
You know Latrell Sprewell's in.
He's in. Of course he's in.
I mean, Wes Matthews is still a viable source of basketball. Yeah. Devin Harris can still play a little bit.
Josh Gosser, get Captain America on the American Olympics.
Yeah, he'll probably be on the bench, but yeah, he's in there.
Oh, man. This is good stuff.
It is. It's very good. In fact, we could talk about, well, we won't this podcast because we're plumb out of time for it, but you may find my Suburban 16 where I rank the area athletes from our coverage footprint who are now on the next level, either in college or pros. I rank them 1 through 16. You can find that.
You teased your blog post already on the American Olympics and Team Wisconsin. Like, I thought you had already typed it up as we were talking. Like,
it would be amazing if I had. It would be amazing if I had, but no. I haven't. You know, the hockey team, by the way, just wouldn't be that good because most Wisconsin-born kids, well, no, I don't know. Most, like, the University of Wisconsin seldom has Wisconsin kids on their team, you know?
It's Joe Pavelski and Jack Skilly. Well, Drew Stafford grew up here. I think I played with him. He was really good at hockey.
Since the Canadians will not be involved, I feel like they can declare. So maybe guys like, you know, Danny Heatley and them, they can actually play for Team Wisconsin, having gone to the University of.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, so Suburban 16.
Sorry, keep your shameless plug going.
You can find that on our brand new looking websites, lakecountrynow.com or any of the mycommunitynow.com websites. They're very different looking. We're under the Gannett model now. I happen to think the websites look great, so check them out. Also, the all suburban baseball team is out. Our all area team for Lake Country is also out, but you can find a whole ton of information on the all suburban baseball team. Our player of the year, Ty Weber of Menominee Falls. You heard him on this very podcast 2 weeks ago, and he is our player of the year after an outstanding performance, including a pretty dominant state tournament.
That's a lot of stuff. So first of all, good job. I'm proud of you.
I know.
Second of all, that's not as cool as what we have because there's a lot of Packers stuff going on right now, and I think rightfully so. So when we were in Canton, we did a half-hour show on Friday, did a half-hour, so our Monday roundtable was all Packers, and I think the plan was to keep airing that for a while. So I think you still might be able to catch that. But there will be a show, Total Packers, Favre and Canton, that premieres tomorrow at 7 o'clock. That's another half hour with help from the Packers media department themselves. So that's an awesome half hour look at everything Favre, which I feel like people can't get enough of anyway. So I feel that's like true. There is still appetite for that. And then on my show, there's still Big Ten Media Day stuff. We're getting into high school football previews now. So our first story in yesterday's show, is today Wednesday? I think so. In yesterday's show was Sam Santiago Lloyd out of Brookfield East, the Beast from Brookfield East. So yeah, we're getting into it, man. It is football season for sure.
Keep an eye out for our football special preview sections in both the Lake Country and now Footprint. Sam Santiago Lloyd, surely to be featured prominently. We've got a lot of great feature content coming. We'll have to talk a lot about football next week as we get set for the start of the football season, August 18th and 19th, JP.
Deal. Perfect. Love it. I'm going to go draw up all my teams now.
Sounds
for
good.
Team Wisconsin.
Yeah, biathlon's going to get tricky. Those.
Are you kidding me? No, because here's the deal. Because biathlon, we're going to find somebody up in Wausau who's been doing biathlons their whole life. They just never competed at it.
Yeah, or even at McMiller Sports Complex in Waukesha, or the Waukesha area, I should say. They play biathlon all the time.
Biathlon is skiing and then shooting, right?
Correct, target shooting, yes.
Yeah, that's what they do in Wausau. That's called Tuesday, not biathlon.
Yes, we have to. You're right. Let's take a trip to Wausau and start recruiting for Team Wisconsin Biathlon.
Love it. Love it. All right, beautiful. Well, you did a good job today. I'm proud of you. This has been the Initial Reaction Podcast. For Mr. J.R. Radcliffe, I'm J.P. Kadoran. Goodbye, friends.